It's time to know your lane.
In hockey, this is not only supported, this is
a badge of honor.
Oh, absolutely. You're an agitator. You're a pain in the ass. You're a guy who the other teams hate. This is something that is going to put you on the map as a player. Why does anyone care if Stroman's hated by other teams?
This is Overdrive on TSN 1050.
Hour 2 Overdrive continues, TSN 1050, and on the TSN Go app. Brian Hayes, Dave Festrak from The Star. Michael Lombardi will join us, longtime NFL executive, doing work now at Bill Simmons' site, theringer.com. He'll join us in the next 5-7 minutes. We get into the Magic Johnson, Paul George tampering allegations. I don't believe for a second that the NBA is going to find anything that will actually prove this.
Are you kidding?
They don't even want to find any evidence anyway.
This is laughable.
They're not going to mess around with Magic and the Lakers. And they've been a tire fire for years. They're waiting for the Lakers to get it back on track.
This Pacers conspiracy theory culture is ridiculous. First, they're mad at Paul George for announcing a year in advance of his free agency that he'd like to be somewhere else other than Indiana. Like, he gave them a year's notice, and they called it bad timing that he was saying he wasn't going to commit to the franchise long term. And now they're trying to say that the Lakers tampered with Paul George. I mean, come on. How about, why don't you try and, you know, lawyer up against the Hollywood Hills and Hollywood starlets and the Hollywood machine and the Pacific Ocean? Yeah, sue the Pacific Ocean for being so damn nice that he'd want to leave the not such nice city that Indianapolis is.
It's not terrible. It's pretty bad.
Not much to recommend it.
Although Oklahoma City's no better, and that's where he is now, Paul George.
Yeah, but that's a way station on the way to the West.
Oh, he's going to L.A. Now, listen, I wouldn't be surprised if Magic tampered technically. If at some point they met, they talked. I'm sure George spends the offseason in L.A. He's from L.A., and he's Magic Johnson. And if Magic came out and said something to him, but I can't imagine he'd be dumb enough to text him something or email him something. They're not going to subpoena phones here. And the truth is, Magic will get the Trump defense. He's new. He doesn't know any better. Even if it gets that far down the line where they're thinking of doing something.
It won't.
No, it won't. Nothing's going to happen.
I mean, the truth is, if you know anything about that league or any league,
everybody tampers all the time.
Players
come out and tamper all the time.
Of course.
They tweet out, I would love to see that guy leave and come to my team.
They do.
They do.
That's technically tampering. And the idea that, the buzz is back. Did you hear that?
Yeah, the buzz is a bit concerning. But if you missed it earlier this afternoon, out of nowhere, Festrak was on a great rant about the Osuna situation, and out of nowhere, just buzzing showed up. But I think it disappeared,
anyway,
so you're good.
Yeah, the bottom line is that buzz that occasionally appears is like the non-existent tampering charges that are like, this is not going to happen. Like, the idea that the Pacers are doing this just shows how clueless the Pacers are. Because why do you press this? Like, is this a PR stunt? Is this trying to tell your fans that we're hard done by?
Well, that wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah.
I think every team plays to their market. And that would be a market that would have an inferiority complex. I could see that kind of thing happening here.
Yeah.
Uh-oh, the Knicks stole our guy, or the Lakers, or the Celtics.
Well, maybe 10 years ago.
You feed that beast.
Maybe in like the Rob Babcock era, but in the Drake as the global ambassador era, like,
you really think
that's
that mentality has changed in Toronto? I don't think it has.
I think there's a little bit more security with the city you've got here and the idea that it could draw players. It could be an attractive place to play for players.
Well, I guess that argument, what it has going for it, is that DeMar re-signed and Lowry re-signed twice.
Right.
So those two players, who are effectively the Paul George of the Raptors, decided to re-up, which was uncharted territory for the Raptors.
Right.
Because when Bosch could leave, he left.
No, but Bosch signed once and signed once.
But with restrictions. It was like the RFA status of NBA. At that point, in that CBA, and I think it still exists now, you essentially have to give your team 7 years. You're going to sign a 3-year entry level, then you're going to load up on the 4 years where you can't really go anywhere, but you can become an unrestricted free agent after 7, and Bosch walked after 7. Vince didn't even get to 7. He demanded out before that.
No, but they did sign here after their rookie deals.
They technically did.
They did. I mean, they did. They had other options. They could have waited it out,
but not
and
really
let it expire.
They don't like. I don't know the details of it, but there were so many restrictions. You know this, Feshchuk. You know that second contract.
Well, Tracy
in the
McGrady.
NBA.
No, but
that was before
the
new CBA.
Yeah, it was. So, but it was still Vince Carter had the. Could have left. Let's put it that way.
He could have demanded his way out earlier.
Yeah,
he
that's
effectively
what I'm saying.
Still
he hung
chose
around.
To do that.
So let's not say guys haven't re-signed.
But you know that Lowry and DeMar were very different.
Yes.
They were truly unrestricted. They could go anywhere if they wanted to.
Well, Lowry possibly not so many places because there didn't seem to
maybe
be that
the
many
options weren't out there.
I don't think there were a ton.
And there was maybe more incentive to stay here based on money because the CBA now sets it up where if you re-sign here, you could actually make more cash. But I think even that theory has been debunked almost because there's so much money in the NBA now, an extra quote unquote 30 or 40 million, I don't think really matters to the top end guys.
That is an issue they're going to face.
I really don't. That's, look at Kevin Durant.
Yeah.
Kevin Durant's like, I don't care. Great. Well, I could go to Washington and get 40 million a year. I'll take 28 here.
And it's not even like the thing in the NBA that you can't really compare it to in the NHL is like Durant, forget the basketball salary. Like when he faced that decision, he had $360 million guaranteed from Nike.
Exactly.
That was either already paid into his bank account or was pending to be paid. I mean, when you've got a $360 million endorsement deal, I mean, you don't really have to worry about a few million here.
Well, and that's the
truth.
The high-end guys, the top 20, 25 players in the NBA, let alone the top five or seven most marketable guys, they're making so much money. And they're still going to make money based on this CBA, where even if you don't cash in on the hometown money, Durant's still making $28 million cash from the Warriors.
Like, so he left some money on the table, which he did. And
he did.
He didn't have to. We understand
but
that.
It's but it's not like, okay, dude, you can either stay here and get paid $200 million over the next 4 years or go somewhere else and make $4
million. Exactly.
He's still going to make like $130 million or something. Yeah, it's absurd amounts of cash. Where I don't really think, if a guy wants to leave somewhere or go somewhere else, I don't think he's going to say, you know what, that extra 40, I got to stick around. I don't think it's going to happen.
No, it's not going to happen in that league. I think it would happen in like an NHL, like where, you know, like the John Tavares thing, where, you know, people have been saying, well, he could come to Toronto for, I guess Craig Button had that fun idea. Well, wouldn't he sign him in Toronto? But the difference is, Tavares has made, I think, I added up the other day, he's only made $40 million in his first 9 years in the NHL. So if he's staring down, you know, a 7 year, 8 year deal that'll pay him 70 or 80 million, you really think he's just gonna have some fun for a year and
hockey,
wait it out?
Hockey's so different because also the endorsement money isn't there in hockey.
And there you go.
They make their money from the actual contract.
Exactly.
From playing the game and getting paid from their team. That's how they make money.
That's exactly it. Like, I mean, and you might maybe Connor McDavid might be an exception to that. Maybe Sidney Crosby's been a bit of an exception to that. Ovechkin's probably had, you look at his deals, his endorsement deals have probably been fairly significant, but they're not Kevin Durant, $360 million guaranteed from Nike.
Not even close.
They're small percentages of that, like minute percentages of that.
Well, and a lot of it actually has to be in your homeland. Like Ovechkin, I'm sure has, I would think, endorsement deals in Russia and making money over there. Sid is making a lot of his endorsement money up here.
Sure.
With Tim Hortons and with whoever else he's working with,
Gatorade and Gatorade, and
a lot of that's not in the States because hockey endorsements—they're not going to spend their Nike's not going to spend a fortune on hockey players.
No, they're right out of hockey.
They're doing it on football and basketball.
So it's no, but yeah, you're right. Ovi, when you went to Sochi, I mean, his face was everywhere over there. He had to be just minting money in Russian endorsements. Mm-hmm. I mean, it must have been insane. But you're right. The difference between what the hockey guys are pulling in and what the basketball guys are pulling in is just ridiculous. And so in a lot of ways, it's, you know, it's not the same conversation about, well, you can go here and wait a year and then sign your big deal. It's just the money's just insane in the NBA. The rules don't apply to the other leagues.
Well, let's try to get a read on the tampering rules and regulations and the under the table stuff in another league. And that would be the NFL, because we're joined now by longtime NFL executive. He's big in the media game. He's doing work with Bill Simmons' site, TheRinger.com. He is Michael Lombardi, joining us for the first time here on Overdrive. What's happening, Michael?
Not much. How are you guys doing?
We're doing well. We were just talking about this Magic Johnson, Paul George tampering story. Any relation in the NFL? What kind of tampering is going on in the NFL?
Interesting dynamic. We go to the combine every year in Indianapolis. You're not supposed to talk to the agents, and you're not supposed to talk to anybody, but at the combine, all the agents and all the people that represent teams are in one place, so obviously there might be a few discussions, but I mean, it's part of the nature of the game. The NFL actually has a period, much like the NBA does, where you can talk to agents. You can't consummate a deal, which is what the NBA does as well. But look, this is something that when you have two people that are going to be talked about and people can reach out and all that, I think it's just the nature of the game. It doesn't really affect me one way or the other. I just think it's part of the league we play in.
Have you ever asked one of your players to not tamper, but kind of sell your program on your behalf?
All the time. You want your play. That's what sells your program. You have to have your players buy in, and your players, by buying in, will help other players come in. It's the butterfly effect, right? So you have to get a group of people that buy into what you're doing, and then that butterfly takes off and forms another group, and all of a sudden you've got an all-in team. And that's where, you know you're starting to make progress. That's how New England's able to get guys a little bit cheaper than most, because they get guys that buy in. They tell their friends, you want to win, come here, and that's what happens.
So, Michael, there's word that NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell is close to signing a big contract extension that'll take him through to the 2024 season. We all know, he's been hard up for cash. I think he's only averaging something like $22 million in salary his first 12 years as commissioner, or his first 10 years, or something like that. This probably doesn't surprise you, but what do you think it means about the tenure of Roger Goodell?
Well, look, the NFL has been extremely successful, and I think you can see it by the value of the franchises. I mean, truly, that's how commissioners measure, right? By the value of the franchises. Jeff Lurie spends $220 million to buy the Philadelphia Eagles, and now it's worth over close to $2 billion. Jerry Jones spends $240 to buy the Cowboys, and it's up to $4 billion. Wow. The value of the franchises have all increased. So by that being said, Goodell has done a tremendous job of marketing the NFL. I think what we're in an age now where we're going to see is how we handle the new digital media, whether it's going to be streaming, how it's going to handle it. All those factors play in, because the traditional television as we know it kind of is starting to fade away a little bit. I mean, the true networks, with Amazon, Netflix, and all those companies being involved in some way or the other in football, add more markets and add more competitors for the product. And look, we know the demographics of the NFL are tremendous. And we know that when CBS lost the NFL back in the early 80s and mid 90s, that they lost their demographic audience in terms of advertising dollars. And it's impactful. And I think we are in the entertainment business. And so when you oversee a bunch of organizations that are worth billions, including teams like the Cleveland Browns who haven't won, I think you're going to be rewarded handsomely.
He is longtime NFL executive Michael Lombardi, doing work with TheRinger.com, joining us here on the Maple Toyota Hotline. Last year, I guess a couple of years ago, when the Deflategate stuff was ongoing and Robert Kraft, the owner of the Pats, was in the middle of it, there was this big uproar that Kraft was going to fight Goodell and was going to try to oust Goodell. And now, we're full circle here with what's going on in Dallas with Ezekiel Elliott and this idea that Jerry Jones is going to like sue the league or try to get Goodell out of there. I mean, this extension for Goodell, what does that really say to you about how willing Jerry Jones is going to be to fight on behalf of his player?
Well, I think there are two different issues. One, your left and right brain. One issue is he's going to fight for what he believes in his player and send a message to his team that he's willing to fight for the players. The other part of his brain is like, what's good for the league? And I think that's where fans don't always see that. One of the things I think Belichick does so well is when you look at decision making, and I think this is something we all don't really understand. It's what I call a false duality. So when you look to make a decision, or just like you laid that out there, there's A or B, right? You're either going to support Zeke and B, you want Goodell out. Well, really, that's not true, because false duality indicates that there's another option, C, D, E, and F. And so I think that's where we don't tend to look forward to that. And I think Jerry and Robert have done a good job of separating what affects their team and separate what is in the best interest of the National Football League. And that's how you prosper as a league and as an institution. And I think that's what they'll do. Look, I don't think nobody's going to say Jerry's happy with this decision. I think that's fairly accurate. That's been reported. However, that being said, it's not going to make him want to get rid of a man who's made him a lot of money being the commissioner.
Well, there does seem to be a Trump fake news element to Goodell and the coverage that's applied to him, where I think it's media-driven, media-obsessed, yet I'm not sure the average fan cares about who the commissioner is. Why would he care? I mean, as long as the team, his favorite team's playing every Sunday and he can get the package and he can gamble on it or play fantasy, what does it really matter who's actually in that office in New York? I mean, do you get that sense that the league understands that the media might go crazy, but the average fan isn't really affected by who's the top guy?
You know, I was fortunate early in my career. I worked for CBS Sports with the great Jim Nantz, and one day I was talking about all the stuff that was going on in my world, the general manager world, about this guy was going to get fired and that guy could get fired. And Nantz grabs my arm and he says to me, he says, Michael, this is really interesting, and I'm sure you appreciate it, but the little old lady living in Des Moines, Iowa, cares about two things. She cares about who our head coach is and who our quarterback is. And that's all that matters. And I think that is really true about everything else in the National Football League. No one cares what the GM thinks. No one cares what the owner thinks. No one cares what the commissioner thinks. They care about their quarterback and head coach. And I think, unlike baseball, football isn't controlled by the GM. It's controlled by the coach. And that's why you see that dynamic.
So speaking of that, Michael, you know, I saw on your Twitter account you've been speculating about, with a couple of preseason weeks behind us, will there be a quarterback actually move before the start of the regular season, which is only, you know, 2 weeks plus away. Do you see any movement in the quarterback ranks?
I think there has to be. Look, there's been some guys. Look, A.J. McCarron at the Cincinnati Bengals has played really well. I don't think Brett Hundley's played as well to determine the authorized move. But when you see Paxton Lynch, the first-round pick of the Denver Broncos, not win the starting job, you have to be a little bit concerned. Now, John Elway said he's not interested in trying to find another quarterback, and that may be so today. But I think when you scan the marketplace and you look at the availability of quarterbacks and you look at the team that do need quarterbacks. I mean, look, is Cleveland, they're going to stock Brock Osweiler tonight. Is Deshaun Kizer able to play? And what happens if they don't like Osweiler and they don't feel Kizer's ready to play? They don't think Cody Kessler's the answer. Do they make a trade for quarterback? You know, they've talked about A.J. McCarron. I think there's a lot of situations where teams pretend they're happy with their quarterback and deep down know they need to find an answer. And I think these next 2 weeks, reality sets in. You know, when the draft's over, the one thing I've experienced in my career in the NFL is everyone thinks they're going to the Super Bowl the day the draft's over, right? The team's really good. They got all this depth. Everything's good. And, you know, after the first two preseason games, reality sets in. You know, and Churchill had a great line during the war in Great Britain. He said, fear does the work of reason. After the draft, you can't reason with anybody. But after two preseason games, fear comes in, and now you can reason.
Well, does a guy named Kaepernick benefit from any of that fear?
He has to. Look, I mean, I think Blake Bortles and Jackson has made it very clear for the last 2 years is not an NFL caliber quarterback. And I've also made it clear that I think that Colin Kaepernick lacks some necessary qualities in terms of his anticipation, his accuracy to be a consistent starter in the NFL. But he's a better quarterback than Blake Bortles. Mm-hmm. Now, what Tom Coughlin wants to do and what Doug Marrone wants to do, that remains to be seen. But I think the reality of this situation is you can't win with Blake Bortles. And Bill Walsh taught me this a long, long time ago. If you're playing poker and you got a pair of twos, you're not going to win the hand. You better discard and get somebody better.
With longtime NFL exec Michael Lombardi, and that's where I think this upcoming season is going to be fascinating in terms of the focus on the draft. Because we were talking about the differences in leagues when it comes to tampering. There's one thing that every league absolutely is all for, and that's tanking, if there is a stud waiting for them at the draft. And by all accounts, there's upwards of three, maybe four or five high-end quarterbacks that could be available in the top 10, top 15 next year. How do you think that might be affecting the quarterback position this year? Because you look at the Jets, they're abysmal, but it doesn't feel like they want a quality quarterback.
Well, I think they do. You know, I think they're trying. I think they want to see where they are with Christian Hackenberg. And unfortunately, last week against the Detroit Lions, he did not play very well. They've got to find out. They've got to find the answer. And I think there's a lot of teams we talk about tanking. It's hard to tank in the NFL. Look, tanking by the Philadelphia 76ers, I'm an expert on this because I unfortunately happen to be a 76er fan. It's a painful existence, just so you're aware of that. But I have been a fan my whole life, and what they did to me was they just gave up. They put the white flag and surrendered. I find it hard to believe any NFL team, any NFL coach can do that because he's got to stand, and there's only one game a week, and he's got to stand in front of his team, and he's got to get them ready. You lose your credibility. You lose your ability as a coach, perhaps to get another job if you pretend you're going to tank. I don't just think that happens. Basketball, I think there's no question that Sam Hinkie and what he did in Philadelphia, he raised the white flag. He gave up. I think Brett Brown did a marvelous job of being able to endure and listen to, for 3 years, having to take the take all the wrath of losing to eventually get in a position to where he would have gotten to if they would have just tried to compete. One thing we know, you have to have a great culture to win in any business. And when you tank, you lose culture. And remember this, scheme isn't important, culture matters. And I think that's where I think all this tanking talk is nonsense.
We hear all the time about how NFL coaches, especially in training camp, it's all about attention to detail. It's about being on top of their players. It's about setting rules and standards and holding players to it. With the eclipse going down today and Odell Beckham Jr. posting video of him staring right at it, do you think the coaches throughout the NFL warned their players beforehand not to be dumb enough to actually look at the sun?
Well, I think you have to coach your players on everything. Look, I've been around two of the greatest coaches of all time, Bill Walsh and Bill Belichick, and every day they lectured their team on what needed to be talked about, the address, the agenda. It's part of leadership. And look, the Giants have liked what they do. Odell Beckham's kind of on his own island. I mean, he's kind of created this illusion. He's really done a tremendous marketing job. He's convinced everybody he should be the highest paid player in the NFL, and he's not even the best receiver in the NFL. I mean, if we were holding a draft tomorrow, he wouldn't be the first receiver picked. It would be Julio Jones, and maybe it would be A.J. Green, and then all of a sudden it would come down to whether we draft Mike Evans, or we draft, and so he's created this tremendous PR behind him. I think he's a talented guy, and he scored 35 career touchdowns, which is remarkable for a three-year player. However, that being said, he's not the best player at his position, nor should he be the highest paid, but he gets everybody's attention with his tremendous marketing, and sometimes we lose sight of that. And look, the most important thing a coach has to do is get his team ready for the opening game. He's got to get his team ready for the season, and he's got to prepare them, and how he focuses them is up to him.
This has been a blast. We'll have to do it again down the road. Thank you for this, Michael.
Thanks, guys. Bye-bye.
There's Michael Lombardi, longtime NFL executive, doing work at TheRinger.com, joining us here on the Maple Toyota Hotline. Red Tag Days are now on with 0% financing and lease rates on the Toyota Corolla and RAV4. Visit MapleToyota.ca. I could picture coaches feeling like they have to give a warning to their players. Like, they treat them like children a lot of times because they act like children. And I could see them breaking camp for the day and being like, please, please don't stare right at the eclipse.
It's like, and it's like we were saying, like, of the two classes of people on the planet that think the rules do not apply to them, I think pro athletes and the president of the United States, they both are high on that list. And, of course, who was looking up at the sun without glasses today? None other than
Donald J. Trump.
Exactly.
That has to be on the cover of Time magazine.
Think about that.
Doesn't it?
But you need the audio of the aide saying, don't look up.
I know.
Quiet, quiet, quiet.
His henchmen being like, please, like screaming, don't look at it. Like, you got to put a leash on this
guy.
It's
amazing.
He walks right outside and stares right at it.
Just when you thought it was a day, you were saying, like, when we got in here, it was like a day where we didn't have to talk about
craziness and terrorism, Nazis and terrorism and Trump.
And yet Trump somehow seeps in.
Yeah.
Finds a way in.
He can't help himself.
He's the publicity hound of all publicity.
And this
hounds.
One was not on purpose. Like,
you don't think so?
No, I don't believe he stepped out there and said, probably watch not. This, I'm going to stare at it.
There's just something about him, though, that makes you think there's something inside him that urges him to do things that will just cause a stir, right?
Like, that's the thing. Like, say what you want about him. He is a fascinating figure.
Like, there's no lie-low gene. There's no gene in him that's just, let's just have a quiet week. Like, that gene does not exist in his body.
And in an era, like millennials, we talk about them all the time, I happen to be one, where our attention span can dwindle at times, I have not moved on from the Trump obsession.
How can you?
I can't.
He's running the planet.
Every day, I'm like, what's going on? What's he tweeting about? What are people saying? What is the New York Times or the Washington Post reporting now? Who's leaking stuff? Who's getting fired? Who's going to quit?
It's so true.
It's constant.
I think it's killing sports. No one wants to talk about sports.
That's the truth. Last year, I absolutely believe that last year sports took a huge hit because of the election.
You're right.
Like, the NFL ratings were down, and some people blaming it on Kaepernick, which I don't believe for a second.
That's not an excuse.
That's
that I
why
buy.
You stop watching that's, because I, that's you not. Didn't even watch. TV doesn't show the anthem. They're in commercial break.
There was no mass protest of NFL games because people were sick of Colin Kaepernick.
It was people were watching Fox News and MSNBC and CNN and the nightly news and reading online what was going on. And I don't know if it's going to carry over once the season begins this year, but wouldn't shock me if craziness continues to happen. Amin Alhassan will join us from ESPN, kind of a front office insider on these Magic Johnson, Paul George tampering allegations.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll get into the NHL Network's list of the top 20 centers in the NHL, where Matthews lands. And the Hockey News has sent out their top 50 players going into this season. Matthews is not surprisingly on that list. We'll tell you where he landed. Alex Ovechkin standing on that list, though, caught my eye. It's a number I'm sure he has never held before. Maybe going into his rookie season. We'll tell you about that, too. Feshchuk's in here from the Toronto Star. I'm Brian Hayes. Overdrive continues on the TSN Go app. Yeah! That was an interesting clip from Josh Hosang from the Islanders. Toronto kid, young guy. He's a truly talented, like upper echelon talent. Big personality. He's had some issues. Remember last year, or maybe it was 2 years ago, he showed up to camp late and they just sent him right back to junior. But I like the personality. I like how outspoken he is. I love that he just said what he said. Toronto kid, his dad's like a huge Leaf fan and he'd love to see him lose to the Islanders in the playoffs. Why wouldn't you think that way? You're an Islander.
Great kid.
That's the kind of stuff you're looking for.
Yeah, you want to see a kid like this succeed. Like, and he he's had his stumbles, but I liked how he's kind of responded to him. Like, he, I don't know if you saw it, like it was last year after he was late and got sent back. You know, I think maybe it was the end of last year, but he posted this Twitter thing with all these alarm clocks and said, like, I finally made it on time. Smart kid. I mean, you know, comes from a good family. Played on that McDavid team with the Toronto Marlies in minor hockey, where in a lot of games like that I saw, you know, he stood out more than McDavid in a lot of ways, just with his raw talent. So I'd like to see him succeed.
Yeah, I remember going to see that team play at North York Centennial. It's not called North
Herb
York
Carnegie.
Centennial. Herb Carnegie now. And that's what the buzz was. You got to see this McDavid kid who was an underage playing for that Bantam team, I think it was. And then you got to see this Hosang kid. And I feel like they were playing like Robbie Fabry's team or something like that.
Yeah, the Rebels.
The Rebels. So Fabry was the kid on the other team
exactly,
who you had to go see, and now they're all in the NHL.
Yeah, and actually that Rebels team beat that Marlies team in that particular Cup.
Yeah.
Thanks largely to the goaltending of Liam Herbst, who was just outstanding in net. But Hosang and McDavid were something to watch at that age and still are.
So the NHL Network coming out with a list of their top 20 centers going into the new season. The Hockey News, their top 50 players. We'll tell you about that later in the afternoon. We'll get back into the Jays being swept at Wrigley over the weekend. Dirk Hayhurst in about 35 minutes. But Magic Johnson back in the news. Allegations of tampering with him and Paul George. And now the NBA has launched this investigation. The Indiana Pacers want to get to the bottom of it. I don't picture this going anywhere.
No.
Unless there is like a text from Magic that gets subpoenaed where he says, I'm going to tamper with Paul George and I'm going to convince him to opt out at the end of next year and come to L.A. I don't see how they find a smoking gun. Let's bring in ESPN NBA insider, front office insider, back on Overdrive. Here's Amin Alhassan. Amin, what do you make of this tampering allegation and the idea that this investigation is even happening?
It's happening because someone filed a report. There's a lot of stuff that happens the course of the year that I guess you could call tampering, but because nobody actually complains about it, it just kind of withers and falls away. Sometimes there are things that are absolutely tampering, although really low level. So on .com today, we have ESPN.com, we have a nice little Q&A about this. For example, a couple years ago, the Atlanta Hawks season ticket team sending out an email to prospective season ticket holders saying, hey, we have cap space. We might sign Chris Paul or Dwight Howard this summer. That's tampering. But it's really low-level tampering, you know, and that no one's calling Chris Paul or Dwight Howard and saying, hey, you know what, the Hawks are really into you. And so the league knows that's clear-cut. You find the team that's in for an infraction, you move on. The other end of the spectrum is what happened with Joe Smith in Minnesota about 15 years ago, which was they had a secret contract. He signed for the minimum with the knowledge that the next year he was going to get this massive pay raise. And so they put in writing, hey, when I come off this deal, you're going to take care of me.
Now, obviously, the league found out about the document being in writing, and that's what made them the harshest punishment in tampering history, which was 5 ticks taken away and millions of dollars in fines and a suspension for Kevin McHale, who was the GM at the time. So when we talk about this scenario right here, are we talking about Magic Johnson winking awkwardly on Jimmy Kimmel? Well, that would be closer to the Atlanta Hawks example. Are we talking about, as you said, a text message from Magic to Paul George or one of his representatives, hey, we want you here. We're going to have you here in 2018. Well, then that would be something else.
But what's your gut feeling on this one? I mean, because to me, it looks like just a team that's kind of making a PR stunt out of this in a lot of ways, where they're saying, we've been hard done by, the Indiana Pacers are saying, we've been hard done by those big bad Lakers to their own fans as a way to sort of save some face on George leaving town.
I mean, they might be right. That's the whole thing, is that just because there's the absence of proof is not the proof of absence. So there's because it happens every single team. Every team is tampering one way or another. You're talking to people you shouldn't be talking to, saying things you shouldn't be saying to. But the big difference, the huge differentiator is, can you prove it? And for the Pacers, they might absolutely be right. Magic might absolutely be in conversations with either Paul George or his agent Aaron Mintz, trying to find a way to get Paul to basically not go anywhere, but we'll just wait until the Lakers have the money to sign him. That can be true, and at the same time, there can be absolutely no proof. Because if you say, well, look at how much time he's been on the phone with Paul George's agent, maybe that's the proof. The Lakers will turn around and say, wait a second, Aaron Mintz reps Julius Randle, who's a current Laker, reps D'Angelo Russell, who was a Laker until about 2 months ago, and he reps Luke Kennard, who we drafted in the draft. So there's a real plausible explanation for them to be talking to Aaron Mintz for hours and hours every single day because they had multiple topics to talk about. And therein lies the rub. It's not that the Pacers are making something up, and it's not that the Lakers are red-handed. It's that no one can prove anything because it's one of those really weird, nebulous things that you can't get your hands around.
With Amin El-Hassan from ESPN NBA Insider. Looking ahead to next offseason, it's going to be the season of LeBron and what he's going to do and will he leave again. And the idea that he's connected to the Lakers is one that most people are aware of. Can you picture a scenario based on their cap situation and where they're at as the Lakers where both LeBron and Paul George could sign their next season?
Oh, absolutely. They've set themselves up pretty well as far as impending cap space. The only question becomes, can they find a taker for one more contract to just basically clear it and make it nice and easy? But the idea is the amount of cap space that they're going to have next summer, they can come to agreement to terms with LeBron and Paul George and then figure out the math later. It's not that hard, I guess is what I'm trying to say. It's not like, for instance, a team having $7 million in cap space and saying, oh, we want Paul George and LeBron. Well, you've got huge cap calisthenics to do. A great example of this is in 2014, actually, when LeBron finally let it be known that he was ready to come back to Cleveland, the Cavs had no idea. They had enough cap space to sign one sort of max player in Gordon Hayward. And when they got the word, they had to do all these trades and clear all this space because they had to get rid of Tyler Zeller and Jared Jack. And it was actually one of the biggest things that a former GM, David Griffin, ever did, which was, in a moment's notice, do a bunch of deals to clear up the cap space to sign LeBron. Lakers aren't in that situation. They're going to be a lot more comfortable. They may have to get rid of a contract or two, but it won't be that hard.
Do you get the sense LeBron will do that again, not let anyone know until the last minute?
Come on, guys. Of course he's going to. It's LeBron James. Has he ever shown any other way of approaching life?
But here's the thing. Is there a Magic element to this, though? Like, such respect for Magic that he wouldn't do it to him?
No, I don't think so. I mean, Pat Riley, he had respect for Pat Riley. Did he do it to him? I mean, you know, I kind of feel like LeBron's going to do what makes sense for LeBron and for his personal situation, and not that there's anything wrong with that. That's well within his right. But again, if you're the Lakers, you got to operate. There are no guarantees in this life, right? In this, at the very least in this league, you can't get anything guaranteed. As we've seen from Joe Smith, if you try to get something guaranteed, you might as likely get in a lot of trouble for that. So you can only put yourself in a position to take advantage of opportunity. And that's I talk about all the time. No one can guarantee we're going to win championship in the next 3 years. It's nice to say, but you really can't guarantee it. What you can guarantee is we're going to put ourselves in a position where we're able to compete for a championship, because that's all you can really guarantee.
So, I mean, if you're sitting here in Toronto and you put yourself in the seat of Masai Ujiri as the GM of the Raptors, and you see on the horizon an Eastern Conference being vacated by LeBron James next summer, how do you approach that in the waning days of the Lowry-DeRozan era with this window of opportunity where the East could be wide open?
Well, I think the big question was actually this summer, do we spend money on Kyle Lowry? Kyle Lowry, who's, it's hard to see him getting better from here on out. He's as good as he's ever going to be. Kyle Lowry, who's 30, around the 30-year age range. And Kyle Lowry is going to cost you a ton of money. And so there were a lot of people who said, $30 million a year, let him walk, who cares? No, 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 he's not that good. But that doesn't take into account. Wait a second, guys. We're at a time where, A, the Eastern Conference has gotten incredibly weak right now. Forget LeBron leaving. Right now, the Eastern Conference is already a lot weaker. And if Kyrie Irving walks out that door, guess what? It just got weaker again, even from one of the best teams in the Cavs. But then a year from now, that door's wide open. And a lot of people say it was Celtics, and Celtics are doing a great thing. They're building a great team over there. But if I'm the Raptors, I'm not that intimidated about my chances against the Celtics like I am against LeBron and the Cavs right now.
Yeah.
And so if you're Masai, I think he's played it right. It's I don't want to sign a 5-year deal for Kyle Lowry, but I still want to stay competitive because I want to see what happens after nuclear winter. I want to see if maybe I'm the guy who's going to the finals every year.
Really appreciate the insight and the time and the takes. We'll have to do it again down the road. Thank you, Amin.
Thanks a lot, guys.
Amin Alhassan from ESPN. I think that's exactly the way Masai decided to approach it in the end. I don't think he loves his team. I don't think he loves their chances of really competing for a title. Not alone in that. I think 29 other teams are looking at Golden State and saying, what's the point anyway? But in the East, if LeBron is leaving, and Masai knows a lot more than the average person, everyone has a feeling within the NBA of what's going to be happening here with LeBron, depending on who you listen to. He's either 100% leaving, 50-50, somewhere in between. But Lowry, DeMar, Ibaka only locked in for 3 more years.
Yeah.
DeMar, 4 more. So there might be some flexibility down the road if you feel like, okay, we're going to take a kick at the can for a few years and then we'll make an adjustment on the fly. And by all accounts, Masai's going to be here for that anyway. He's going to make at least one more massive trajectory decision with this team before he goes anywhere.
Well, and I think there's every opportunity with next summer approaching to add one more guy. If you could add that one more guy to take a little bit of pressure off of DeMar DeRozan and Kyle Lowry to give one more real legit scoring option out there. And I'm not talking about the occasional great game from Norm Powell and the occasional great game from DeLon Wright. I'm talking about a guy who can reliably give you some really good production that actually takes pressure off your two best players, who obviously, as we've seen 100 times, Hayes have really struggled in the playoffs when defenses load up on them. Then I think you could have something here, at least in terms of
you could have a high-end Eastern Conference.
You could have an Eastern Conference championship contender. You don't have a championship contender, but you have an Eastern championship contender.
Dirk Ayers in about 20 minutes on the role of Roberto Osuna, what's gone on with him over the past few weeks, what we saw at Donaldson playing short yesterday, and the idea that at some points over the rest of the year. We'll catch up with Dirk in about 20 minutes. And Floyd Mayweather is rattled leading up to his fight. We'll tell you why next. We'll get back into the Jays getting swept by the Cubs. They're now five games out of that second wild card spot. 38 games left. Roberto Osuna, what went down in the 10th. Who really should have the blame placed on them for what went down yesterday afternoon? And we'll get into a number of things, including Donaldson playing short. Dirk Hayerst in about 15 minutes. We'll tell you where Austin Matthews ranked on the NHL Network's top 20 centers going into the 2017-18 season. But we've been talking about the solar eclipse, and you and I both think it was kind of overly promoted and a bit underwhelming. Didn't really add up considering all the attention it was getting. We've been talking about this for weeks. And today it was all eclipse all the time. I was driving in. I didn't really notice much.
It's overhyped. It was an event that was absolutely overhyped by these NASA dudes, space enthusiasts who get very little media time and just wanted to milk the hell out of this.
This was their chance to shine. Yeah, their chance to shine.
Yeah,
this was the Mayweather-Pacquiao of scientific events.
Yes,
and potentially the Mayweather-Pacquiao analogy may be usurped this weekend by Mayweather-McGregor. Although I don't think so. Even if something silly happens or it's boring, I think it'll be a bit different because of how unique it is. It's an MMA fighter against a boxer who's been retired, and they're both loudmouths, and they're both loved by some, hated by many. This will be different, I think. I think this will allow us to walk away and say, okay, I think it was worthy of the intrigue. I'm hoping, anyway.
Let's hope.
Let's hope.
Because we're going to spend time on the thing. You don't want it to be a complete and utter dud. But you got to believe, like, it's funny, just speaking to some MMA guys, the one thing they will tell you about Conor McGregor is that he never has a boring fight. Now, Floyd Mayweather, boxing enthusiast, will tell you, has many, many boring fights in his past and can turn, you know, the tactical, scientific beauty of boxing into something that's not really worth watching because he's just so good at it.
Well, Pacquiao had the same reputation as Conor McGregor in many ways.
Yeah.
He walks in and he throws. He'll try to throw as many punches as he can, and let's try to knock each other out if we have to. And Mayweather made that extremely boring.
But because
Pacquiao couldn't fight through it.
But the maybe the logic, I've heard this from a couple of MMA commentators, that the idea that what McGregor will be throwing will be so different than anything Floyd Mayweather has ever seen, maybe that'll be the factor that makes it an interesting fight. Maybe it will be the fact that Floyd's never seen anything like this guy that will be the thing that makes a Floyd fight actually exciting.
Maybe it's his psychology, too, because he's been telling the world he's going to be partying all week in Vegas. Although, with that being the case, he'll be walking around with a water bottle, stay at a club for an hour, and leave and cash in a couple hundred grand. But I guess he went nuclear over the weekend when he realized that Justin Bieber unfollowed him on Instagram. He called Bieber a traitor, and he went crazy. And I guess sources connected to both Bieber and Mayweather told the Sporting News that the Biebs been hanging around with a pastor from the Hillsong Church, and his like lifestyle is changing, and he's been counseled to think long and hard on the people in his inner circle, and I guess he decided Money May couldn't cut it anymore. So the Biebs unfollowed him, and now Mayweather just can't handle it.
The Biebs has found Jesus. Canceled the tour, found Jesus. I guess found Jesus, canceled the tour, and now is reassessing his friendships.
And Mayweather is on the short end of the stick, or got the short end of the stick, and maybe he'll be so distraught that Bieber's no longer following him. That's the opportunity McGregor's looking for.
That was the turning point of that's the McGregor-Mayweather fight.
Dirk Hayhurst in about 10 minutes, and we'll get into Austin Matthews on the NHL Network's top 20 center list. Final hour up next. Overdrive continues on the TSN Go app.